From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Sarah Lubinsky is living her dream. After years of working as a U.S. Geological Survey botanist, she decided to become a full-time landscape artist. Lubinsky incorporates her biology background into each one of her paintings, collecting detailed field notes and translating them onto a canvas in her home studio in a cozy log cabin.
What I wanted here was a sort of soft, glowing, kind of late afternoon with the prairie glowing in that soft light and the sumac really bright.
Lubinsky showed me this vibrant, dreamy painting of the bluffs in Myrick Park Pond in La Crosse during a visit this week to her Brownsville, Minnesota home. Lubinsky's paintings are much more than works of art. She's painting properties protected by the area's land trusts with hopes of generating more attention to the organizations that preserve and protect driftless area land.
Most of us know that the driftless area encompasses a region along the Mississippi River in the four states, you know, Wisconsin, Minnesota, piece of Iowa, and a little bit of Illinois. And it's a unique geologic area. It was a specific region that was not covered by the last glacial movement, and so it's very rugged. It has, as we all know that live here, it has an interesting topography. We have not only the river, but we have trout streams and interesting steep blufflands and little valleys tucked in everywhere. It's a really gorgeous area. And I think it's a unique area from a number of perspectives. It's unique because there are plants here and habitats here that occur nowhere else in the world. And although it's subtle to most of us, unlike, you know, being along the ocean or in the mountains or something, it has a very special beauty. And I think the river contributes to that beauty in the biggest way because it's, you know, such a grand river. But the region has those special qualities that I really love. So it's a really fun place to work. And I'm working actually from about Lake Pepin down to Savannah, Illinois. So I'm not covering the entire driftless area. That could take another few years. But I'm focusing on very specific places. And those places are those that are conserved by primarily the land trusts within the region. There's six or seven land trusts under the Blufflands Alliance. And they have conserved over 50,000 acres in the last 10 or 15 years. And I'm also working on some of the more public lands that have been preserved by the government, basically the Fish and Wildlife Refuge and some of the state DNR properties too. And my goal is to highlight what a beautiful area we have and how much work the conservancies have contributed to helping us maintain the environment.
I think for many of us that do live in this area, we know that it's special. We know it's beautiful. Maybe sometimes it's taken for granted. Mm-hmm. And also, even if you talk with other people, maybe in the eastern part of Wisconsin, they have no idea that this is here.
Right, that's true. And I think for those of us that are here, sometimes, like you say, we do take it for granted. I worked for the U.S. Geological Survey for a number of years, and my job was to map plant communities in the national parks. So I was always going off to some grand national park, and I would come back here and think, oh my gosh, you know, it was so beautiful out in Glacier, or so beautiful on the coast of Maine, and oh, I'd love to live in one of those places. But as beautiful as those places are, I started realizing that we have such a great resource here. And this is my home, and that's what I want to highlight and focus on.
So was it your work as a botanist that made you want to return to painting the landscapes that we have here? Or I'm wondering if you could just walk us through that evolution within your personal.
Well, I'm getting pretty old, so it's kind of a long evolution. Okay. But I was around back when, you know, the first environmental movement started. We didn't even have a Clean Water Act or a Clean Air Act until the 1970s, which is just blows me away because that's only like 40 years ago or so. But I became really interested in the environment during that time, even though I was majoring in art in college. And so I thought more and more about how could I contribute. And I think a lot of it came out of, this is going to sound a little weird, but it came out of a real feeling of devastation or despair for what we were doing to the earth. And I think from feeling that kind of pain and looking at the source of that pain, it made me realize that I really care. I mean, and part of this earth as we all are, and we depend on it for our, you know, our food, for the air we breathe, for the water we drink. And I just wanted to make a difference. So that prompted me to go into biology, which I have no real aptitude in. I was terrible at chemistry and statistics. Yet I forged through because I really felt like it was going to be a noble profession of some sort. So I worked in botany. I did research along the Mississippi River on aquatic plants. And I also worked in the national parks to help create habitat plant community maps. And that was fulfilling to some extent, but it was really hard to measure what impact that was really having. And was that really what I wanted to do? And sitting in front of a computer, which was a lot of the job, just was not kind of who I was, or actually making my way through the government bureaucracy was kind of difficult for me, too. I'm pretty much an independent thinker, and I always wanted to change the system. So I started, when I was in the parks, I started looking around, and while we were having conversations in the field about plant ecology and how we were to map things, I started looking more and more at the light and at the colors and thinking about painting again, which I did in college, and a little bit as a hobby through the last few years. And it started to get a stronger and stronger sense to me that this is what I wanted to do. And actually, it was a very, very deep secret dream of mine to be a landscape painter. But it was really terrifying to think about, too, because I had a good job. I was doing something that I really thought was, you know, fairly important. I'd worked hard to get to where I was through lots and lots of college. And to take that step was something that I was really not ready to do for a long time. But my husband kept pointing out to me, you've been, you know, whining about this for 5 years. You keep saying you want to be a landscape painter. And I would say, well, what if I'm not successful? And he says, well, what does that really mean, you know, to not be successful? And finally, we get to the point where it's just like, okay, I've got to do this. And a lot of the reason is driven for the same reasons I went into biology. You know, I care about the earth. I'm not the type of person that can be a really great activist because I'm too introverted and I'm not good in front of the public and I just can't get out there and do that sort of thing. I've never had enough money to, you know, give to organizations to make a huge difference. So I kept thinking, where can I make a difference? What can I really do? And to me, it's painting my heart and soul and saying, this is what we have. This is the beauty that I see. This is important. You know, can we open up the conversation about why it's important to conserve and what we want out of life and what we want for future generations and what we want the vision of the human species to be.
On your website, you said that your journey within art was subjective, but it was a mix of science, philosophy, and art.
There's a really interesting group of painters that I found that I'm really connected to. They painted in the late 19th century. And they were super, super into Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. They were really interested in Charles Darwin because he'd come out with Origin of Species just before that. And so they were very, very interested in nature. And they felt there was great mystery in nature. And of course, at that time, they were just beginning to learn, you know, what things were and understand a little bit more. We know much more now, but at that time, they were just enthralled with this country, and it was very sublime to go out there in nature. And so there was a really big movement to understand and paint nature. And there was also a lot of artists and scientists that went on field trips together. So they were not looking at art and science as two separate things. So anyway, I've been reading all these guys, you know, everything from Aldo Leopold to Henry David Thoreau, and I realized their philosophies and their perspective on conservation, on the environment, what's important, is very much the same kind of philosophy that I have. So I'm mixing that art background with that plant background, that plant taxonomy and ecology background, my experience across the country in different environments and observing different patterns of vegetation with what I think and feel based on those philosophies.
You're working on a series of landscapes that, as you said, go to Lake Pepin all the way down to Savannah, Illinois, and you want to draw attention to the different land trusts in the area. Can you talk about what you plan on doing with this series?
Well, the goal is to create an exhibit that will be approximately 50 pieces of work. And I think based on space needs for where the exhibit will be shown, that will vary. But I'll have a lot of pieces of work, both bigger paintings and even some of my smaller homemade walnut ink drawings from the field and some of my painting sketches from the field will all become part of an exhibit. And it's already starting to be scheduled. The first exhibit will be at the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, Minnesota, opening in March of next year. And from there, it'll go to several other venues, including Cascade Meadows Wetlands and Environmental Center in Rochester, and to the Bell Museum in Minneapolis. And the goal is to bring attention to the landscape and say, from, you know, one person's perspective, this is what we have. Let's open the conversation about what these land trusts do and how important they are. And just keep the doors open to bringing in people that may come for the art but not know about the land trust, or bringing in people that are land trust people but really haven't seen the conservation efforts from an artistic perspective. So I think it combines people together in hopes of having new conversations and keeping the dialogue and raising awareness.
Can you walk us through maybe an average day or an average week when you find an area that you think that you want to end up painting and the steps that you take to actually get there?
You know, an ideal perfect week is for me to travel to one of the places I've selected. And those places that are on conserved lands are selected through the help of each land trust. For example, one of the places I'm going is a piece of property that was first purchased by the West Wisconsin Land Trust called Maiden Rock. And it's been under the management of the Department of Natural Resources for a long, long time. And it's a public area. There's a little parking area and you can go up there. I would be armed with everything in my car, from my oil paints to water-based paints to my ink to my pencils and my charcoal and my pencil pads. It's really a lot of stuff. What I like to do is growing into something that's becoming a little bit more meditative and contemplative for me than I've done in the past. But I love to go to an area and just sit and observe. And it's funny because if I just keep my mind open, certain interesting things happen around me. I've had little birds land on my, you know, backpack, and deer walk up to me, and just some fun experiences in the field that wouldn't happen if I didn't take the time to sit there quietly. And a place can change, you know, from day to day, just as the weather changes. You know, something can be amazingly soft and glowing at sunset, or really bright in the mid-morning, so, or really drizzly in, you know, on a rainy day. So after I sit for a while, I usually get out one of my sketchbooks and I start doing some sketches, either, you know, I'm in pencil or charcoal or ink, and I'll do a series of little, what we call little thumbnails, and they're little like 2-inch by 2-inch little squares, or however we want to format those. And I'll start doing some compositional kind of ideas. Composition is really important because that's a whole subject, you know, for landscape artists, about how you get the viewer into your painting and, you know, how everything works to keep the eye moving in the direction you want it to and what you want to focus on. Then I'll focus in on some of the details. Sometimes I'll just draw bark or a tree species or an acorn or some leaves or whatever, because all those little sketches add to my knowledge of what that place is about. I also take a lot of field notes. I write a lot in the field, and I'll put descriptions about what I see for color, what I see for species. I have a really strange art notebook, and then I'll have a sketch, and then I'll have a whole list of Latin names of the plant species I see. But that all feeds into my understanding. So my paintings, in the end, I want them to be based on fact and knowledge, but I also want them to have a mood of the place. And I want them to have the poetry of nature embedded. So that's a lot to ask of a painting because it combines so much.
You know that every artist is different in how he or she prepares to, you know, go into a painting. But it's so interesting to me that each painting you do is almost like its own research project.
It is. You know, I think that stems from my curiosity about everything, and I can't stop that at all. What's really, really cool about this project is I am already learning so much. And I think knowing a place and being within it is what makes us feel like we're really centered and at home somewhere.
It just seems like this could be a project that makes science and art so much more accessible to people, not only in this area, but maybe other people who want to learn more about the Driftless region.
That is such a good point, because that is actually one of the goals. It would be really fun to have people embrace those two disciplines as not separate. And there are so many fun things you can learn by combining those two. Something else that will be added on to the exhibit, especially at places like Cascade Meadow in Rochester, is an environmental learning center. So we'll be incorporating some workshops and some lectures and some things like that. We may go out and collect plants or take kids out to do nature drawings or those kind of things. And, you know, they're all little small steps to helping people get out in nature and realize and embrace, you know, that we're part of the cycle of nature and in our world.
Is there anything else you want to talk about in regards to the conservation efforts?
I think it's amazing the work that the individual land trusts do, and under the umbrella of the Blufflands Alliance. You know, without them, we wouldn't have 50,000 acres of preserved landscape. And it's interesting to think about where we're going with that in the future. As we look at budgetary issues with state and local and federal governments, we realize there isn't going to be money for a lot of the things that we wish we could do. So it's really up to us, I think, as individuals, to think about how we can contribute and if it's important for us to do that. It's just that dialogue, again, of opening up, you know, what we have, why it might be important, what we really see as our vision for this region, and trying to get people to think about the long term. What do we really want? Do we want more development, which can be, of course, add a lot of vitality and be very important to the region, but can we balance that with having natural landscapes preserved for future generations and for us right now, and to retain, you know, those ecosystem services that they provide. There's so much that we can get back out of the land if we have a chance to conserve it.
Sarah Lubinsky is a botanist turned artist who's working on a series of driftless area landscape paintings. She hopes to raise awareness and money to help land trusts along the Upper Mississippi River. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To see photos of Sarah Lubinsky's work, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. There, you can also hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers, or if you have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. Newsmakers is also on Facebook. Updates on future shows, links to our archives, photos, and more. Like us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook.